Let me ask those of you in here to turn to Matthew, the 14th chapter. Matthew 14. I wonder, as you heard these songs this morning, what went through your mind? Rescue the perishing. Duty demands it. How'd that rub you? Lead me to some soul today. That's our invitation song. Can you really and truly believe that? Do you really mean that? You know, it's important to understand that many times preachers have put us on a guilt trip because duty demands it. And I can remember when Phyllis and I were just getting started, waiting for a paycheck to be able to get some groceries because we were down to the cupboard being bare. And the preacher gets up and he tells us, you need to sell everything you have and go to, you name the spot, South America, the African jungle. I remember us being disturbed, you know. I don't know that I can do that. And sometimes we had our arm twisted. So we need to talk about that a little bit. I want to share with you some things that have happened to me recently. I think in the church sometimes we have said, well, that's what we pay you for. Well, this may come as a shock, but you don't pay me. Bill keeps talking about doubling my salary. That's because you double zero. But even if I was being supported by the church here, you don't pay me to do your mission work. The commands that Jesus gave are to us as individuals, not to the corporate body. I just had the opportunity to spend 10 days in Colombia, South America. Interesting 10 days. My daughter says, life-changing. And actually, both of my daughters have had their lives changed by doing this type of thing. My daughter, Kathy, went to Aruba when she was a struggling junior in high school and slept on a dirt floor and was able to work with a group of people that didn't speak her language. And she came back a different kid. I don't know whether it did anything for Aruba. I think the country survived it, still there. It changed her. And I think Wendy found that to be true in Colombia. You see, this is a very different place than here. Bogota is at 8,500 feet. So even though it's very close to the equator, incredibly cold. Temperatures in the 30s and 40s every night. And I love that. I'm from Michigan. But we had folks from Arizona where it was 118, and they had a problem. And some of them had trouble with altitude. I did not, fortunately. This is a country that has had a recent history of violence. The drug cartels, the drug lords, have been in control of Colombia for a long time. We saw their castles. There was one near where we stayed, an elaborate castle. But the country got tired of that. And the government there, with the support of the United States, came and drove the drug lords and the drug cartels out of Colombia. So where'd they go? Venezuela. Have you been reading your papers? Now the violence is in Venezuela. And that's an awful thing. But what was interesting was that the fact that the United States had been a part of that made the people very warm to us, very hospitable. I didn't have any bad treatment the whole time I was there, even though I was very visible. There were armed soldiers everywhere. And I remember the first night as I went to where I was giving my lectures, there were on every street corner, there was a guy with an AK-7, a pistol in his belt, a sword on his side, a nightstick, and he was like this. That's kind of spooky. But I finally went up to one who I had heard saying something in English, and I said, "Why have you got so much hardware?" I said, "Are you afraid of an incident?" And in his broken English, he said, "No, we just want people to know they're safe. Because they have lived for 50 years never knowing security." Can you imagine that? Never knowing whether your child was going to get home alive from school. Never knowing whether somebody was going to kill you because they wanted money to buy drugs. And during that time, the infrastructure of that country has been really let go. The roads, they took a two-lane road and made it a four-lane road with nothing else being done except removing the sidewalk. They got four traffic, and there's about that much room between you and the vehicle next to you. They play chicken. Do you remember chicken, some of you old-timers, when you were a kid? Chicken was when going down the highway and you're racing to cut somebody off, and the question was who would back off to avoid a wreck. Well, in Colombia, there's no backing off. It's understood. Whoever gets there first cuts off everybody else. And then you add to that the fact that half the population rides motorcycles. So here comes a motorcycle, 40 miles an hour, following the white line between trucks that are literally 6 to 10 inches apart. And that's everywhere you went. The streets are cobbles. So you're bouncing as you go. It's rough. People turn without making signals. We saw two people killed. We saw a dozen accidents, but remarkably few considering the fact that the place had 9 million people, all driving, and all driving crazy. The water's not safe to drink. So every day you fill your canteen because we have bottled water at the place we were staying. The food is okay, but it's very spicy. And everything is in a soup because that stretches the food. So the first bowl I got was a bowl about this big, and it was green on top. And when I started digging down in, there was a chicken leg in there. And the chicken leg was also green, but it had been boiled. I did not get sick. Catholicism is the dominant religion. Everywhere you see the effect of Catholicism. Beautiful churches in every town. Huge, massive structures with a plaza in front of them, which is the life of the community. People are selling everything in the plaza. Food, artwork, musical instruments. There are sometimes entertainment. The first day we were in competition with two Colombians who were singing Simon and Garfunkel on the other side of the square. They had a bigger crowd than we did. But gradually people drifted to us. We went to the Salt Cathedral, which is the major tourist attraction in Colombia. This is a salt mine. There were the 13 stations of the cross. There were Roman Catholic priests and deacons everywhere. There were icons and statues. And there must have been 1,000 shops selling statues of the Virgin Mary. What was interesting about that is it has had a profound effect upon what has happened to the faith of people in Colombia. Because here is this elaborate, beautiful cathedral. And there were cathedrals everywhere. And the people are living in abject poverty. And the Catholic Church, at least in Colombia, has done almost nothing to relieve the suffering of the common people. And so people have given up on God. We went on Mount Montserrat. This is a cable car that goes up the side of a mountain. It's another tourist trap. There's a huge Catholic church at the top, and behind the Catholic church, there's all these shops that sell all kinds of religious artifacts. And I sat there after dark looking at a city of 9 million people, a valley of 13 million people, living in squalor, disillusioned with God, having absolutely no knowledge of the Bible. And I'm literally in tears. What can I do? What can I do? I'm one person. I have no money. I have no real talent. I have no way to be of assistance to them. And just look at the pain. See, I think the problem here is that you and I have been taught the wrong concept of being a missionary. In Matthew, the 14th chapter, we see an incident in Christ where he calls us to missions. By the way, I do want to emphasize, I'm glad we've got some young people in here with us today, because we had one little girl of 5 years old. We had five teenagers, and they were by all means the most effective of the people that were on this trip. Some of you parents may not want to hear this, but in 8 or 9 months, I'm going to start talking to you about whether some of our kids want to go there and be missionaries with us again in Colombia. I know my three grandkids want to go. But in Matthew 14, Jesus has just suffered the loss of John the Baptist. We read in verse 10 that John was beheaded. And we read in verse 12 that his disciples came and took up the body and buried it and went and told Jesus. And again, I'm in Matthew 14, beginning with verse 13. When Jesus heard of it, he departed by ship to a desert place apart. And when the people heard that, they followed him on foot out of the cities. And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them. And he healed their sick. And when it had become evening, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desert place, and it's getting late. Send the multitude away that they can go into the village and get food." Well, that's a reasonable request. The disciples are saying, "Look, you know, we got 5,000 people here, not counting women and children. We'll see that later. And it's getting late. And you can't leave these people out here in the desert at this time of night without food." So Jesus tells them to go get food. Look what Jesus says, verse 16. "But Jesus said to them, 'You feed them. You feed them. You give them food to eat.'" You know what I call that? I call that the "ah" moment. The "ah" moment. No, 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 no. "Jesus, what's the matter with you? We got 5,000 people here, and all we got is a couple of dead fish and a couple of loaves." No. No, Jesus. You feed them. You know, this happens over and over and over and over and over and over and over with Jesus. The "ah" moment. Do you remember what he said in Matthew 17 and verse 20? "If you have faith as the grain of a mustard seed," smallest seed there is, "you have just a little tiny bit of faith, you can say to this mountain, 'Get out of here, go over there,' and it'll go. Nothing will be impossible for you." Now, the context of that is not what Shane does. Shane moves mountains. Okay? He does it with heavy equipment. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about mountains that are much bigger than the mountains Shane moves. Mountains of self-doubt. Mountains of insecurity. Mountains of confusion. We're talking about the real mountains in life. But over and over and over, we see Jesus doing the "ah" movement. The wedding feast at Cana. That certainly wasn't what you would expect to happen. You'd think he was running to 7-Eleven, not just turning water into wine. When Peter is jailed, do you remember what happened there? God gets him out of jail. He runs to the house where all the disciples are. And the woman is supposed to open the door is so beside herself, she forgets to let him in. The "ah" movement. Paul says, "I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me." Philippians 4 and verse 13. So here I am on Mount Montserrat. What can I do? What I can do is say, "Lord, we need one of your ah." I can turn it over to God and get out of his way. 50 years ago this last year, I said to myself and to some close friends, you know, faith is going to be an issue in America. People are losing belief in God because they're being indoctrinated with materialism and ignorant positions about science. And I prayed, "God, what can I do?" It's important to understand here that we frequently misunderstand Matthew 28:19. I want you to listen to this really, 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 really carefully. Because preachers have used this passage and used it wrong. The passage says, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Ghost." Okay, what that says is you need to sell your house and go to Columbia, right? That's not what it says. It doesn't say that you are to quit your job and go be a preacher. Most of us, me included, are not capable of doing that. There are a few people that are capable of doing that. I'm thankful that we have talent like that around, but that's not me. That's not most of you. You know what the Greek actually says there? Now listen to this carefully. The Greek actually says, "Therefore, wherever you go, preach the gospel of Jesus Christ." Wherever you go, preach the gospel of Christ. It doesn't say force your hand. It doesn't say sell your house. It doesn't say give all your money away. You say, "Well, yeah, but there was that rich man that came to Jesus and he asked Jesus, 'What do I need to do to be perfect?' And Jesus says, 'You need to sell everything you have to the poor and go do what I'm doing.' Why do you say that? Because that was that man's Achilles heel. That was his trust. He was a materialist. He was involved in money. He put all of his faith in securities, in money, in things. And Jesus says, 'You love something more than me, you need to get rid of it.' But that was given to an individual, not to us. And early Christians preached wherever they went. Who was Lydia? Lydia was a seller of purple. That was her job. What was she doing? Well, she had a storefront where Paul was. This is recorded in Acts the 16th chapter and verse 14. And she was evangelizing where she was. She had a group of people down by the river. And Paul went and preached to them. And verse 40 of Acts 16 says, the church began to meet in her house. You see what she did? She went where she was and preached the gospel. Mary and Martha, who were they? They were women who, in John 11, practiced hospitality. They had a house. What did they do? Did they sell that house and go preach? That's not what they did. What they did was that they provided a place and the support for Jesus to be able to conduct his ministry. The Bible tells us that the women were supporting Jesus and his disciples financially. If you doubt that, research it. You'll see that's what the Bible says several times. What about Aquila and Priscilla? In Acts 18 and verse 3, because he was of the same craft as Paul he's talking about, he abode with them and wrought, for their occupation were tent makers. They didn't sell their occupation. As tent makers, they went and they used their occupation to support what Paul did. Luke, who's Luke? He's a doctor. He's a physician. What did he do? He wrote the book of Acts, as well as, of course, Luke. You see, he didn't give up his practice, but because he was a doctor, he had the freedom to be able to go with Paul and help Paul, probably not only medically, but also in terms of being able to conduct his ministry. Who was Mary Magdalene? You see, you can go right on down the list. Jesus said, therefore, wherever you go, preach the gospel. Let me tell you something that happened to me that I thought was kind of interesting. This is after the fact. I wish I was smart enough to know these things ahead of time, but this sort of hit me between the eyes. It was hard to miss. We're coming into Bogota on the airplane. They give you a customs declaration where you have to tell why you're coming and what you're going to do and what you brought with you. My problem is it's in Spanish. I don't read Spanish. And I'm sitting next to a lady who has said very little in the trip because I speak English, she speaks Spanish. And she's got this same form. And I'm looking over at her form to try and figure out, where do you put your name? Where do you put the date? And she finally said to me, you want to copy? I said, yes, I don't speak Spanish. She said, I speak very little English. I said, you speak more English than I do Spanish. So she nurses me through this form. In the process of that, I find out she's a doctor from the Dominican Republic. I also find out she's a widow. She's gone through what I've gone through. We start to talk. When the form is ready to be picked up, she says to me, you're a Christian. And I said, yes. And then I showed her my business card. I have a little card that has our web addresses and stuff on it. I said, I talk to people about the existence of God. She says, oh, I wish I could have someone who could build my faith about God because I'm a doctor. I said, doctors of all people should be believers in God. And we went on and on and on. What was I doing? Therefore, wherever you go, preach the gospel. There are people in this room right now who are Christians because Bill and Patty Gibson, they didn't sell the campground and go out and put up a soapbox. They didn't go around with a PA system on the back of a truck broadcasting in downtown Dowagiac. But Dave and Donna are here this morning because they preached the gospel where they went. And that's just one example. You see, our job as Christians is to share our faith. Columbia taught me a great deal about missions. In your bulletin, there's a handout. You might take it out and look at it with me for a minute. It looks like this. See, what happened was that the community needed to know the church exists. The city of Dowagiac needs to know that the church exists. The city of Niles needs to know that the church exists. The city of Cassopolis needs to know that the church exists. So how do we set up a way for the community to get to know the church exists? No two places are the same. When Paul went to Athens, what did he do? He went to the Areopagus. He talked with the Epicureans and Stoics. What did he do? He went to Athens and did what people in Athens do. And so in Columbia, we had a team of 25 people from the United States, most of them from Arizona, a few from Tennessee, a couple from Texas, working with a local congregation. When we got there, they told us, well, what we're going to do is we're going to sing in the plazas. I said, we're going to sing? Yeah. I said, I can't sing Spanish. She says, no, you sing English. And they handed me a little book of songs. I had brought the songs here and asked Richard to help me because there was one song I didn't know. The rest of them were old, familiar songs. So we went into the plazas and we, 25 of us, stood and we started singing these songs in English. Meanwhile, the local workers are going around and handing this brochure. This is the cover of it, this right here. They were handing it to people. Now, if you look at that, you'll see it's in Spanish. If you want to know what it says, ask Leon Forbes. He can translate it for you. You'll see there's an ugly guy at the bottom of it. But what he has in the circle there is an announcement of where I would be speaking. So what's happening is that local workers are talking to people about this program and inviting people to the lectures. We had a house full. We're speaking in English. We sang in English. Now, some people are there because they're trying to improve their English. But we had Jimmy Penza, who is the minister of the church in Peoria, Arizona, was translating for me. And people came and they listened. One of the reasons this is happening, one of the reasons I was asked, is because Richard Dawkins, who is the number one atheist in the world, is coming to Columbia in December, and he is debating the Roman Catholic Church about whether there is a God or not. The Roman Catholic Church has their chief bishop taking up the debate with Dawkins. I am not optimistic, because what he's going to try and do is quote from Catholic history, and people in Columbia could care less about Catholic history. They have seen poverty. They have seen sexual abuse. They have seen pedophiles. They have seen so much bad stuff happen that they think religion, and Christianity in particular, is destructive. That's what Dawkins is going to hit. There's three debates, three universities in December. So people are coming because what I'm talking about is scientific evidence proves there's a God. We have a brochure. I have in your handout the brochure in Spanish, and I have the outside of the brochure on the back in both English and Spanish so you can get some idea as to what was presented. So we get on the sidewalks and we sing, and people start asking questions. We start having discussions. Quite a few people speak English. Many times I'm having to work with a Spanish translator. But you know what I think was happening here was that people were beginning to see that Christians can be different. One of the things that the guy that was leading us in singing kept saying to us is, be sure your body language is happy. Smile. You're glad to be a Christian. Well, that's important because all they've seen is abuse. And some funny stuff happened. I hope this won't offend anybody. But I have a presentation about design and nature. And one of the things I show is the kangaroo. The female kangaroo has two nipples, a high-fat nipple and a low-fat nipple. And when the baby comes into the pouch, and the baby has only been conceived 4 weeks ago, it has to hook onto the right nipple because his body cannot metabolize the high-fat content. So the kangaroo crawls in there. He can't get the high-fat nipple in his mouth because the nipple's too big, so he gets a low-fat nipple. So how do you make him switch? Well, there are ligaments running from the bottom of the pouch to the low-fat milk nipple. So when the kangaroo goes like this, with the baby's weight on the bottom of the pouch, it pulls up on the low-fat nipple, it pops into the mother's body, and the only nipple the baby can get is the high-fat nipple, which better meets his need. Now, that's what I'm presenting. I'm showing pictures of this, okay? Jimmy has a problem. There is no Hebrew word for nipple. I'm sorry, there's no Spanish word for nipple. What the Spaniards use for nipple is tit. But there's a lot of Americans around who are not going to want to hear that word in a religious framework. And he's desperately trying to figure out what he can say instead of that. So he tried to describe it, and I guess the description was just horrific. And so the Spaniards are all just laughing, and he turned red as a beet. But you know what happened for that? Everybody's laughing. The Christians are laughing. And Jimmy comes over, and we hug, and he puts his head on my shoulder, and he's shaking his head. And later, one of the local people came to me and he said, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen a Christian have fun. Because, see, all they've known of Christianity is oppression and abuse. They haven't seen what Jesus called us to be. So they saw the love of Christians. And they want to know more about family. You're part of the family of God? Yes. Well, what's it like? Back where you came from, what's it like? And I described you. I described our potlucks. I told them about how much fun we have doing things together. About how some of us play games after services. About how there's a volleyball park out behind our building. Unfortunately, it hasn't been hooked up for a while. We need to get on that. Can't you imagine Gibson and crew out there playing volleyball on that thing? I think that might be something for us to enjoy together. But anyway, I'm describing Bill shaking his head. But they say, that's your church? And that gave me an opportunity to see how the church is people. It's family. We love each other. We serve each other. And I was able to tell them about some of the things that we have done together. And they had no concept of that. I want to tell you about the one baptism we saw while we were there. There was a young man named Adrius, A-D-R-I-S-A-S, it's the spell way to spell his name. He's a sidewalk artist. And what that means is that he is over, he's got a section on the plaza, and he is drawing pictures. Incredible pictures. I've got one I'll show you later on. But the ones he was drawing were just gorgeous. I mean, you'd be proud to have them on your wall. And Adrius was over there drawing these pictures, hoping to sell some of them. One of our guys, a guy named Steve, went over and looked at his artwork and complimented him on it in English. And the guy wanted to know what Steve was doing there, and Steve gave him one of those brochures like you have. And then it was time for us to sing, so we went back and started singing again. And we saw him pick up his stuff and move it over and put it right next to us. And he's sitting there and he's listening. You can see him looking back and forth. As Adrius was listening, he could see tears running down his cheeks. And so one of the missionaries was talking to him. And he said, I want family. I want to know more about Jesus, about what the Bible teaches, because that place has never helped me, pointing to the church. That night he came to the presentation. We fed him. We talked with him. We studied with him. About 2 o'clock in the morning, he said, if that's what Jesus wants me to do, that's what I want to do. I want to be baptized. And as we asked him a few questions, it was obvious he knew what he was doing. One of the missionaries has a rain barrel. You know what a rain barrel is? It's a barrel that's about yay big around. It's about that tall. And they run the gutters in it to collect rainwater because the water supply is very tentative down there. Every house has a barrel on the roof to collect rainwater because the water supply goes off every so often and hot water is almost non-existent. And so they drain the water that has collected on the roof when that happens. So we baptized him in a rain barrel. I stuck my hand in there. Have you any idea how cold water is at 8,000 feet? You know, could hear him gasp as he was immersed into Christ. And he came up with the biggest smile on his face. Well, he showed up at Mount Montserrat when we were there, and he showed us how he did his paintings. And then he said to us, I want to tell you something. He said, when I came up to Kia to paint this time, I came up to make enough money to get back to the cemetery where my mother and father are buried, and I was going to kill myself. He said, I can't stand to live like this anymore. He said, but now I have family again. His wife had left him. His mother and father had died. He doesn't know where his family is. But he's hugging one of the missionaries and he's saying, but now I have family. And now I have Jesus. I had spoken at a rehabilitation center while I was there. He went with us to the rehab center. A little while later, I spoke at an orphanage. He went with us there. He said, you know, I used to work in a rehab center. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, my dream is to help people who are in rehabilitation learn that art can be used to help rehabilitate themselves from drugs, from all of the problems that they have had that have torn them down. one of the missionaries went to the guy that runs the rehab center and said, Adrian would like to do this. Adrian would like to do this. And the guy said, oh, we've been looking for somebody that could do art rehab. We'd love to have him do that. And when we went back and talked to Adrian, he said, and I can share Jesus with the people I have found. You see what's happening? Go ye therefore and teach all nations. Wherever you go, preach the gospel. He's going to do that. It's a little tiny beginning, but great things can come. The challenge that you and I have is that we have a city out here that needs to know about Jesus. We have a challenge because we have to find a way to get the community to know we exist. And we're doing that, folks. We're doing that. We're doing that at the fair. We're doing that with the highway cleanup. In the fall, we're going to have a blood bank here. They're going to have an operation here that Tracy set up. We got wonderful things taking place to let people know we're here and be able to share with those in this community the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you can do that. The invitation song is a challenge. Lead me to some soul today. Oh, teach me, Lord, just what to say. All you got to say is, I love you. All you got to say is, I have something I want to share with you. All you have to do is to let them know that we're trying to do something good in this community. Friends of mine are lost in sin. Isn't that true of all of us? And cannot find their way. There are people out there that desperately need help and guidance and family. Few are there who seem to care. The religious world is bent on entertainment. Our world is obsessed with materialism. People don't care. I don't have to tell you that. You know that. And few there are who pray. Melt my heart and fill my life. Give me one soul today. Make your life count. Preach the gospel as you go. You know, Jesus said, he that is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters. Your life is either preaching the gospel as you go, bringing good things to others, sharing with others, helping others to know Jesus. Or you're against Jesus. Read Luke 11 and verse 23. Read Matthew 12 and verse 30. And if you have a special need, we encourage you to let us know about it this morning so we can pray with you. And if you need to become a Christian, we urge you to accept the simple principles and teachings of Jesus Christ. If in any way you're subject to the invitation, won't you please come as together we stand and sing to encourage you. Won't you please come?